listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up? It is the Forza Podcast. As always, it's Marsh. I'm tired, but I'm excited. Everyone, I'm excited. And as always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are we?
We're doing good, man. It's a quiet day. It's probably like this everywhere, but it feels quiet around Salt Lake, you know? Like, the roads are dead. The streets are clear.
Like, it just feels like a never-ending, like, weekend, and I'm kind of sick of it. Like, I need this damn virus to go away. It's dude, messing up my funk.
I know. Like, for my job, I was delivering a whole bunch of, boxes of envelopes to, like, this business park. So I had to go into, like, a high-rise and, you know, whatever. But the parking lot for, like, all six of these, you know, probably 7 or 8 story business buildings, completely empty. There was just nothing, dude. Just dead silent. No one in the building until I got into the office. And then there was only like 2 people in there. It was just kind of eerie feeling, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I hear you.
Or something.
Today, I went to the doctor and then I watched How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And it was so bad, I just turned it off in the middle of the movie. I've never really done that before.
Yeah, that's man, I haven't seen that movie in over a decade. Easily.
I would not recommend it because I love Matthew McConaughey. All right. But like, it was so bad.
Really?
Like, it was so bad. Like, how the hell did people let them make that movie? I'm so much smarter than all these people.
Dude, have you ever watched The Brink on HBO?
No.
Oh, so it only ran for 1 season, but it has, like, Jack Black and Tim Robbins in it.
What?
And, dude, it's a must-watch. It's on, like, HBO Now or HBO Go or whatever. But it's one of the funniest shows I've ever seen. And it's just, like, it's about, like, a military crisis with Pakistan or something. And Tim Robbins is, like, the Secretary of State. But, oh, my gosh, dude, it's hilarious.
Maybe. I mean, I got nothing but time right now. Yeah, but
highly recommend that, bro.
We got a huge show tonight. We got our veteran of the week coming on first. Then we got the Rutia brothers with Callie and Gabby. And then about 2 hours ago, I got a message from Brian Monroe, former UM punter and now on 560, 790. He wants to come on. So I are you ready?
I think I'm ready.
All right. Let's do it, man. Let's get our let's get Julian on the phone, veteran of the week, and talk to him a little bit.
Yeah, when you put me on the spot there, I am second guessing myself now. I don't know.
Well, we are ready. I am ready. I am psyched. I just gotta do it. I'm just okay. Moving around a little bit. Let's do it. Let's go.
All right. I'm patched in Julian right now. Julian, what's up, man? You're live on the Fours Up podcast.
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Julian? It's Marsh. Thank you so much for coming on. We now have on Julian. He is our veteran of the week, as you guys know. We try to have someone who has served in the military and is also a Canes fan every week. And so, Julian, thank you so much for coming on, brother.
Anytime.
Good deal. How's how you doing with this whole coronavirus thing?
It's a little weird. It's pretty empty, the streets.
Yeah.
Everybody's pretty cautious about this thing, so I feel like everybody's panicking a little bit too much, but I mean, it's good that we're being cautious.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, let's get right into it. So you serve in our military. What branch do you currently serve in?
Oh, I was in the U.S. Army.
Okay, for how long?
I did 4.5 years, from 2005 to 2009.
All right. Okay. Well, I mean, as you know, we're huge supporters of the military. And so what was your motivation to go serve our country? And what were some of the things that you learned while serving? And just tell us about your experience.
Well, I moved to United States when I was in 8th grade. And I saw the 9/11 my freshman year. So that was pretty shocking. And when I graduated high school, I pretty much didn't have many options. I moved to Miami in 2001, and at the beginning of 2001, I graduated high school in 2005, and you know, we were fresh off the boat, and my mom couldn't afford college for me, so I didn't want to work at McDonald's or a factory, so I took JROTC in high school. I liked it. I saw the benefits for the military, and I decided that was the smartest thing I could do. I was only 17, so my mom had to sign me away, and I did what I had to do.
Hey, I respect it, man. I love it, and you know, there's nothing more American than that to me. Is, you know, like you move here from somewhere else, and then like, you know, start contributing. I appreciate it, brother. I really do, and I respect the hell out of it.
We moved from Colombia.
Yeah.
Because of the violence, and we had to get political asylum to stay in America.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I felt like I was giving back to the country that opened the doors for my mom and my brother and myself. So.
No, that's.
I was just giving back.
No, I love it, man. That's I can't thank you enough for that, and I have so much respect for you and your family and you know, like just the idea that you wanted to give back, you know, that, I mean, it's so cool, man. So
that's something that you don't hear a lot of these days. It just sounds like you're very grateful for, you know, the opportunity that United States gave you, and that's awesome to give back. Have you always been when did you become a Hurricanes fan?
In 2001. I moved to Little Havana. We moved to Little Havana because obviously we didn't have that much. So I come from Colombia, where everything is soccer. Like, you need to play soccer when you're little. You need to root for a soccer team. But when I moved down here, it's the land of the football, but the American football. So in Colombia, we're very passionate about soccer. We love our teams. And I was looking for something like that. I was looking for something that I can be passionate about. And the closest thing, it was the Orange Bowl. It was about 10 blocks away from where I was living, and I would ride my bicycle on Saturdays. I never went to see a game at the Orange Bowl, but I was hanging around, you know, the tailgating part. And then I would ride my bike back home and watch the game. So that's when I started watching the Hurricanes, back in 2001, when we were pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Sure. You know, what are your thoughts on, I mean, hopefully we have a football season in September. What are you thinking about the Canes in 2020, man?
I'm pretty excited. I mean, I feel like Manny Diaz is the right guy. I feel like he has the right attitude. I feel like he's making the right improvements this offseason. He, you know, we got a pretty good offensive coordinator. And I'm very positive about it. The whole situation seems like we're going through it feels like the worst part is over and we got better days ahead.
Okay. And I know you and I talked a little bit about recruiting. Is there anyone in the 2021 class, or give me some of the names that you really want to come to Miami?
Oof. Well, I want 5 defensive backs for sure to come to Miami. There are kids from Palmetto. There's also kids from Northwestern. His name is let me see. He's a number 6 safety in the nation. I believe his name is Adams. He right now he's talking about going to Georgia, but I think Ed Reed can pull it and flip it.
Yeah, that's I'm on board with that, the 5 DBs thing, man. That's kind of what we talk about. seems like every week you guys got me ranting about.
Marshall. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
so I was talking about Jason Marshall. He's a cornerback, 5-star from Palmetto.
Okay.
And then we got his safety from Palmetto as well. He's a 4-star. And then there's a few of the guys that I want on offense. Uh-huh. I believe his name is Ryan Rodriguez. He's a center.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, we're big fans of Ryan.
And also the tight end from Texas, Elijah Arroyo. He's pretty interesting cat.
Okay.
Also there's this offensive tackle from Texas as well, Savion Bird. And he looks like the type of he was recruited by SMU, so he's like the type of offensive tackle that the OC is looking for. So maybe we can have a pipeline to Texas now that we have somebody that came from there.
Dude, absolutely, and I'm glad that you brought that up. I feel like not a lot of people are bringing up the fact that, you know, with Rhett Lashley, we have a connection to recruit the hell out of Texas. And I'm a huge fan of Texas high school football. I mean, who wouldn't be? I mean, there's talent everywhere. It's kind of like South Florida.
Yeah.
Julian, give me three players that you are most excited to watch this year. And I'm not talking about like Derek King, but like players who are like a make or break kind of year that you're expecting a lot from.
So Nestor Silvera, I believe his name is.
Mm-hmm.
That defensive tackle.
Yep.
Then Phillips, defensive end.
Okay.
You know, he was a 5-star. And I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes a starter with Greg.
Yeah. So
the guy that transferred from Temple, I don't know. I mean, he's good, but I think Phillips is coming with everything this year, and he's going to take the starting role. And the last one, I would say whoever's going to be the starting running back.
Okay.
I think we're going to be running the ball a whole lot this year. So.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I agree. Our running back unit is going to have a huge opportunity. And, I mean, I like Cam to be the guy to step up.
He has everything to be the number one guy.
Yeah.
It's a question is if it's going to fit in the scheme that, you know, we want to. But, I mean, we got a good freshman class. We got some really decent guys.
Yeah, we absolutely do. I mean, and they're hungry, too. That's what I love about the freshman class is that they're coming in, like, guns ablaze, and they want to prove themselves, and they don't want to, like, sit back and, you know, sit on the bench. They want to come in, and they're coming for starting jobs. And this is not about the current Canes, Julian. I don't know why I just thought this. When you were growing up, give me your favorite Hurricanes watching when you were growing up, when you just moved to Miami.
Devin Hester. Definitely Devin Hester.
Yeah. Everyone says Hester. I mean, I love him. I could watch his highlights every single day.
Devin Hester, he was just so electric. I mean, one of the podcasts that you guys did before, I heard that somebody mentioned that Devin Hester was the GOAT at his position, and there's no comparison.
Mm-hmm.
That was a few episodes ago. And he was right. Devin Hester was, every single time that he touched the ball, everybody just froze and waited to see what happened. And, you know, it was just too much fun to miss out.
Yeah. It's hard to, like, really explain the kind of impact that he'd have on the game. That episode that you're referring to, you know, we talked a little bit about how, I mean, he was like 40% of the offensive production of a NFL team that went to the Super Bowl. You know, like the Bears had a hard time scoring when Devin Hester didn't return a kick. And I mean, they were arguably the second best team in the NFL that year. It's really amazing to put into perspective what Devin Hester was able to do at all levels.
He's the definition of South Florida. He was just electric. And that's what South Florida football is. Just fast, electric, fun.
Yeah, playmaker. Playmakers. I love it, dude. I mean, you summed it up perfectly. You know, that is what South Florida is. I mean, we don't have maybe the biggest guys or anything like that, or, you know, the most precise quarterbacks. We just have playmakers. You know, they're electric, just like you said. And I'm going to switch topics again. I mean, as everyone knows, I've really been studying, you know, what goes into the mindset of a winner and everything like that. And so, and, you know, just the you know, what a winner is. And so, Julian, let me ask you this. When you were in the military, what were the three greatest lessons that you got out of that about yourself and about, you know, what were the biggest takeaways and greatest lessons that you learned?
Well, I had to grow up pretty quickly because I was 17. So you have to be flexible. You have to be able to be led in order to be a leader. And you have to be open-minded.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, and when you say open-minded, can you kind of expand on that?
There's things in the military that you have to do that you've never been exposed to. Some people refused to do it because they felt like it was morally wrong or, you know, religiously wrong, whatever the case might be. It's just there's situations that you are exposed to that you might not be ready, and you need to be open-minded to those things.
No, I love that. I absolutely love that. I mean, change is going to come, and it's inevitable. You know, you're not going to have the same day-to-day, you know, day in and day out. You know, things will change, and it's up to you to change with it. I mean, you can sit around, bitch and moan, things like that. Right. You're not going to grow.
When I was in the Army, I did 15 months in Iraq. I was a combat engineer. I dealt with explosives. We also did a little bit of roadside clearance, which just driving around 5 miles per hour, waiting to get blown up pretty much. But we also did a lot of air assault missions. And when it came down to those missions, we were pretty much hunting these guys. We were looking for the bad guys. And we always had a plan, but the plan never went as planned. Because of the weather, because of the helicopters, because of whatever, you always went to shit. So, you know, you have to be flexible. You have to be open-minded. You have to be able to adapt.
Yeah. I mean, that, bro, that, again, thank you. I mean, going over to Iraq for 15 months, that, I can't even imagine what that was like.
I would do it all over again, man. It was too much fun.
Well,
as fucked up as this sound, it's just, I know a lot of veterans are listening, and a lot of us miss it every day. As bad as it was, it's hard to explain, but you just miss it.
Well, and you know, this is the last question I'll ask. When you were in Iraq, I think some of the greatest leaders are found in our military, because, you know, we have the greatest military in the world, which obviously comes from leaders. What qualities did you find make a leader when you were over there? Like, what stood out to you when it comes to someone who can lead? Like, what does that mean?
Somebody that is open, no bullshit, straightforward. I believe you have to also be able to understand and put yourself in the other person's shoes. Somebody might not understand your logic, and if they don't understand your logic, they're not going to follow. I think those are the two main ones. You have to be able to put yourself in their shoes as a follower.
Yeah. No, I mean, because with the Hurricanes culture, and everything that's been going on the last 15 years, I've definitely looked very deeply into the program and what's going wrong with them. And I think that they don't have enough leaders on the team. I mean, look at the 2001 team. You had Ken Dorsey, Ed Reed. I think those were the two leaders of that team. And when you are led by someone of, you know, people of that capacity, your soldiers, like your teammates, they will go to war with you, and because they believe in you. And right. I think that's very important to look at.
You got to lead by example. And if the rumors are true that the quarterback was partying, getting high before the games and doing all these things, I mean, that's enough for me to know that he's not a leader. He's not a QB quality type of man.
Well, hey, I mean, that's it right there. I mean, you couldn't have said it better. Jordan, you got anything else?
No, man. I just, again, I just want to say thank you for your service and thanks for coming on the show, brother. I just got a lot of respect for you.
Yeah, anytime, man. Just doing my job.
Yeah, hey, Julian, and just like Jordan, just want to thank you again. And I know Hurricanes fans and Americans would like to thank you for everything you've done for our country. You're a great guy. And you're passionate about the Hurricanes. You're passionate about what this country stands for, man. And that means more to me than anything. And so thank you again for coming on, dude.
Yeah, no problem, man.
All right, we'll talk to you later, bro.
Like, go Canes.
I'm so glad we started doing this.
Yeah, dude, it's great.
And it's cool. It humbles you when you hear that.
Oh, like, for sure.
Like I'm just like sitting back and like I'm like the fact that someone like at 17 from another country like wants to give back to the country that took him in. That humbles you.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. That's. Kind of dumbfounded a little bit when he said that, because you know, I mean, we're recording live, but I had to look inside myself for a minute and be like, would I do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just
and I didn't like the answer that I got, so
I mean, it's just we live in a very selfish time where I mean, because before this I was watching a documentary about World War II and kind of just running around the TV, and just the fact that those people and guys like Julian, like they are willing to give up all, I mean, pretty much giving up their life to go fight for this country. Like, yeah. I just don't like, yeah, there's not that sense of humility nowadays to, that goes around like that. And so
my grandfather on my dad's side dropped out of high school as a sophomore, like a 16-year-old. And, he was a big dude. So he was like, you know, probably 6'2", 6'3", when he was 16, and had worked on a farm, so he's pretty, like, ripped. But he signed up for the draft, lied about his age, and was shipped off to the Pacific as a 16-year-old. I can't even believe that.
That, oh my gosh, like.
Yeah, man.
Like, people on, I mean, I do it all the time, and people on Twitter, like, we bitch and moan about these things, these that are so small and so like they don't matter. This guy was just on here talking about like he was like in the middle of this. Like, it's not I don't know. I just have such respect for those kind of people that go in, and you know that like they're probably scared as hell. But like they just keep going. Like. Yeah.
Oh, for sure, man.
So
for sure, it's I mean, when you put it in a historical context, it's crazy to think about how different our generation is, just because I mean, the worst thing that our generations had to go through is that recession that happened in 2008. And I mean, if you compare that to what other people went through, I mean, think about what our grandparents saw or their parents, you know? I mean, the amount of time between the amount of time between like 1910 and 1945, so just a 35-year window, you have World War I, the Great Depression, and World War II in 35 years. And, dude, we haven't seen anything like any of that.
It was just – they're just – they were – those guys were just tougher back then. Yeah. Like
– oh, for sure.
This is – it's such a freaking – so – I don't know, like we just have everything handed to us in this generation, and we're just soft in the mind, we're soft psychologically, and I just appreciate guys like Julian that do that. Like, they're so selfless, and they're so willing to give back. You wanted to give back. Like he said it himself, like he didn't want to go work like a crap job. He wanted to like do something. Yeah. And at 17, that bastard like went and fought for our country for 15 months, dude. Like, do we realize how long that is to like be away from your family in another country, facing the possibility of, you know, death every single day?
Yeah, I don't.
I don't. I know.
Yeah. Well, So it looks like Callie's ready for us. I haven't got a response from Gabby yet, but should we patch Callie in until his brother's ready?
Let's do it.
Cool. I love me some Callie, man. This is going to be fun. Callie, what's up, brother?
What's going on, man?
Hi, hey, Callie.
You're hey. Live.
Good deal, good deal. Yeah, we're just... Gabby, we're just waiting for Gabby to come on, but we figured, you know, what the hell? Let's get his big bro on first.
I agree. Start off hot.
How you doing, man?
I'm surviving, man. That's all I can do right now, just survive.
What's the scene over there down home in Miami?
Well, I just kind of drove around Miami with my wife. You actually have Mrs. Callie right next to me. She's kind of an inadvertent third party. But no. We just had to get out of the house, so we had to kind of, and there's no one on the street, there's really nothing to do, but we just had to kind of step out for a minute. But they've ordered a stay at home for where I live, for my neighborhood, so can't really leave the house to do much.
Jeez. It's crazy, man. I think Utah's gonna get hit pretty hard here in the next few days or week or so. So
why do you say that? What the heck, bro?
What?
Dude, why do you say that?
Didn't you see how crowded the airport was the other day?
Yeah, those darn Mormons.
I know, dude. Oh my gosh.
Really is a lot of you guys. I mean, to be fair.
And we multiply
everywhere.
Yeah. But yeah, it's been interesting here. Life's done a full 180 and kind of changed in the blink of an eye. We're just surviving, man. I'm bored out of my mind. So
yeah.
How much have you watched The Office?
I don't think I've ever actually stopped. I feel like people say like, oh, I've seen The Office 10 times, 12 times. Like, I think it's just one long continuous cycle in which I've watched The Office.
Yeah.
Jordan, are you an Office fan?
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen it. I've seen it three times all the way through. So
it's the most rewatchable show ever. Like, I, even when I don't feel like watching it, it's like an addiction. I just like,
yeah,
my hand just drifts towards the remote and puts on The Office. I can't help myself.
I mean, there's definitely shows that I would take over The Office, but it is fantastic. And my personality is that the fact that everyone loves The Office so much, like, that, you know what I mean? Like, I hold that against the show. But it is.
Oh, you're one of those.
I am one of those guys. I'm one of everyone else likes The Office, so I'm like, you know what? I got my own stuff that I like.
Who do you hate the most in the show, Callie?
Me? Oh, Callie.
Who do I hate the most? I'm not going to say the safe answer with, like, Toby or one of those. honestly, there's two for me that just – they don't ruin the show for me, but I just don't like the characters. It's Charles Minor.
Ugh.
Idris Elba's character, who actually has the positive. And Nellie Bertram. Those two are just awful. Can't stand them.
No, Nellie was really bad.
But, yeah. Like, I mean, she has, like, her funny moments, kind of, right?
Yeah, she has her moments. It's just, like, I just feel like she didn't fit in. Like,
yeah.
It was a totally different, like, it's already, like, a dry humor, and I think she was a little too over the top for the show. Like, that's why I think, like, Steve Carell and Rainn Wilson were so perfect, because they still had, like, that dry humor, and then they have their moments. Where Nellie, I just felt like it was over the top all the time.
Yeah.
She was just odd. What were your thoughts on Will Ferrell in the show?
I mean, it was a short streak. I remember the first couple times I watched it, I'm like, I didn't, and I'm a big Will Ferrell fan, huge Will Ferrell fan. I wasn't thrilled, but the more I watch it, the more I enjoy him for what he was. And he was just a stopgap. He was there for a couple episodes, and that was it. But I thought D'Angelo Vickers was a great character after watching it a few times.
I'm the exact same way. Like, I mean, first time watching it, we just didn't like it because he was different. He wasn't Michael Scott. And I think and this is a controversial opinion because not a lot of people like this character, Robert California. I like him. What do you guys
think? I like Robert California.
I think he was hilarious.
I love the scene where he like walks in as the new manager and then he just leaves and then it cuts to Jim and he's like, so he walked in, took one look at us, drove down to Florida and convinced Jim he needs to be the CEO. So like he took
and
her.
And then Jim looked back at the camera and like says it again. The CEO. I think he's like, he's weird as hell, but like, it's so funny.
Yeah, he's one of those. I think it's just the personality that he portrayed that was great. Like, and just how kind of intense he can get. Like, one of my favorite scenes with him is when Andy calls him and says, "Hey, I have this client here, or whatever." And he says, "Oh, you don't know my real name. I'm the effing lizard." I'm like,
I was just great. About to say that. I mean, what does he say? Like, "I'm the effing lizard king" or something.
Yeah, he does.
You don't even know my real name.
I will say the best episode that I'll watch it every single time and laugh just as hard every single time is the dinner party one at Michael's house with oh my god, it's so cringy, but it gets me every single time when Jan picks up the trophy and throws it at the TV. And he just screams, "That's a $200 plasma screen TV you just broke!" I lose it every time.
Bro, when the dinner guests like first get to the house and he's talking about it, he's like, "I finally broke down and bought myself a plasma screen," and then he says, "I could literally just stand here and watch."
and when he has that little like nightstand thing that he bought, he's like, "Oh, it's either oak or a Nordic cherry," and it's just like it looks like pieces of plywood that he like hammered together. Man, it's so perfect.
It's so good. Like, and the thing about like The Office is that like, Jordan, you can back me up on this. Everyone in Utah, I don't know if it's like around the country, but everyone in Utah watches it. Like, that's like all we watch. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a like countrywide thing, but we always make the joke here that it's on dating apps. That's like it's like white Mormon girls think it's a personality type, you know, and their bio is like, "I can quote The Office." It's like, yeah, so can everyone else.
Yeah,
it's like saying, "Yeah, I can talk about football. Of course, I can quote The Office. Like, what do I look like?"
Like even if you look on Netflix, like you know how they have the ratings now, it's still like top 10 in the U.S. Yeah.
I thought it was like, getting taken down from Netflix.
It is next January because NBC is coming out with their own streaming service.
Yeah.
So.
Thank God they took off Friends.
Oh, that's the most overrated show of all time. I know you're with me here.
More. I hate it.
I'm not gonna say I hate it. It has its moments, but I don't see all the allure that people go crazy over it. Like it's a good show. Like I think it's like it's a good show. Like it has. I'm not gonna say it's a good show. It has its moments. But they're like to me like Ross Geller is such an unlikable character that like I can't watch it. I can't watch too much of it.
He's so because I'm a huge Seinfeld fan too. Like,
big Seinfeld fan, absolutely.
Like, and people, like, they always, like, try to compare it, and I'm just like, stop. Like, Friends is so – it's not funny. Like, Ross is, like – he's so annoying. Like, why do you people watch this?
Ross is probably the cringiest TV character of all time, like, for me. Like, a couple iconic moments in the show, but for the most part, just absolutely cringy. Just – and it's annoying. It's almost over the top.
Yeah, it's
who my cringiest TV character of all time would be. That's actually a good debate. I don't even know.
Off the top of my head, I have a couple. And to me, it's like Ross Geller, Ted Mosby from How I Met Your Mother, ultra cringy. Andy Bernard can be pretty cringy on The Office.
Well, early Andy Bernard, like when he first gets to Scranton.
Yeah.
You know, I love that Andy. It's when they like after Michael leaves and they make him the
manager.
Yeah, the manager, and they totally abandon like the 6 years of character development that they put in on him. That's when I jump off the Andy ship. But I think he's so funny at first, especially when they're in the Stanford when they're in the Stanford branch.
Oh, yeah.
He cracks me up, man. He's so funny.
Yeah. I think he was a lot better as like a supporting character than a main character that he became after Michael left.
Yes.
But I do think he was a pretty good character, but he has his moments, like,
yeah.
And it's pretty tough.
I actually think those last two seasons would have been more successful if they allowed Andy to still be Andy as the manager. I think they tried to change him too much.
Yeah, I mean, this is the nerd in me coming out, but he was actually limited in that last season because he was between filming one of the Hangover movies and like finishing the show. So okay. They kind of had to like slowly pull him off. But
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Dude, my one of my favorite scenes with Andy is when they're still in Stanford and they're playing Call of Duty and they're in the like Josh's office and it's Josh, Andy and
oh yeah.
Yeah, and Jim, and the saboteur.
What class are you using? Sniper rifle?
What?
What? Saboteur.
I'm going to shoot you for real.
Dude, okay. Oh, my absolute favorite Andy Bernard scene is when he goes on a sales call with Michael. And they're sitting in that dude's office, and, you know, Michael notices the model ship desk. And it's like, oh, that's a cool boat. You go fishing, and and Andy's like,
oh yeah,
I sniped a shark. 32-foot Baleiner.
I sniped a shark
from the crow's nest of a Baleiner. Oh man, that slays me.
Yeah.
Damn, Jordan, you got me. That was like a big laugh for me. Oh my gosh, that was good. Oh, I need that. I need that in these dark days.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I've been on sales calls like that before where someone says something and everyone else just kind of looks around like, okay, we're going to move on to the next, you know, like, thanks for killing our vibe.
You know who's actually kind of like that? Like the UM season ticket office. Like they call me, they call me every year to like re-up the tickets and they try and like get to know me. I'm like, shut the hell up. I'm going to buy the tickets. Just give me the number, man. Like,
oh, speaking of sports, Callie, how are you doing with the no form?
With the you broke up for a second. What was that?
How are you handling like the no sports?
Oh, I'm going crazy. Like, it's pretty bad. I work in school, so I've been home literally this entire time, and you know I've pretty much been on my Xbox and I've like created dynasties on Madden and. You know, league managers on FIFA and stuff like that. Like, I'm trying to recreate it any way I can, but it's tough.
Play some Apex, man.
Yeah, man. I'm on pretty often these days, man. I can.
Yeah, me too.
I can play pretty much any time.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to hit you up. I've mostly been teaching my older brother how to play, so I made a Smurf account, and we're pushing through the early levels with him, helping him get used to the game and stuff. But I'll have to patch you in with us sometimes. We can squad up.
Yeah, what? Man. What I've been playing a lot of Call of Duty lately, so a lot of Warzone going on.
All right.
I only play sports games. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Oh, dude. That's a shame. Yeah, we're talking about Apex Legends. It's just like a shooter, but it's good stuff.
I tried playing Red Dead Redemption the other day.
Oh, fantastic game.
I didn't know what to do. I just rode around on my horse for hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. It's a fun game, man. I beat that one a couple times too. That's a good one.
I need to expand my video game and my movie game throughout this time because maybe this is a good thing that we're being quarantined.
I actually lobbed one up for Gabby because I have an Xbox 360 and I had NCAA 14, and he was so desperate that I kind of just took it to him, and he has that now, so he's building his dynasties, and you know I'm just being a good big brother in that regard. So
speaking of which, would you text your brother and tell him to hop on here? I haven't heard back from him.
Absolutely.
Darn it, Gabby.
I know.
I'm texting him, hop on, we're waiting for you.
Yeah.
Oh, so something that I've also done in my boredom involving sports. I put in one of the questions you asked were like, or you asked like, oh, questions we could talk about. What actors would play the Miami Hurricane coaches in a movie?
Okay. Okay. What do you got?
I brother, it took me 2 days. But I got it. I got it. Okay, so let me preface this by saying that I don't have any of the GAs. I don't have any of the assistant strength coaches. I just have pretty much the ones that are pretty commonly known and all the position coaches and stuff. But it's tough to get the kind of doppelganger every time. So I'm just plugging in guys that I think can, you know, we can make look like some of these guys and kind of fit the personality and would be great in their parts. So Manny Diaz. First guy, I got Pedro Pascal.
Mandalorian guy. Okay, I like that.
And he's in Narcos too. Okay. Rhett Lashley, I got Bill Burr.
Ooh. I've recently started listening to his podcast and I love him.
Oh, dude, oh, Bill Burr's the greatest.
He's hilarious. Ugh, yeah, he's good. Yeah.
So I got Pedro Pascal for Manny Diaz, Bill Burr for Rhett Lashley. Also his stand up is fantastic. For Blake Baker, I got Jeremy Piven.
Okay. Guy who played Ari.
Yeah, the guy who played Ari Gold on Entourage.
Yeah. Okay. I love it.
Yeah. D-line for Todd Stroud, I got Greg German. He's the blonde team manager in Talladega Nights.
Oh, okay.
I pulled him up. Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. For safeties, for Ephraim Banda, I got Michael Pena. I thought that was spot on.
Yeah.
Jonathan Packey, I got Cam Giganet, the blonde dude from Never Back Down, the UFC movie or whatever.
Okay.
That's a good one. Let's see. Stephen Field, I got Goldberg, the wrestler. Eric Hickson, I got Guys Charles. That's Smash Williams from Friday Night Lights.
Okay. I love that.
All right. Garen Justice, I got Alan Tudyk. The guy that plays the guy that pretends to be a pirate on Dodgeball.
Yeah.
Rob Lightskins, I got Andy Buckley, who pretends to be who is David Wallace.
Okay. Yeah.
This second half is the part that got a little tough for me. So Mike Rumpf, I got Dule Hill. From Psych.
Yeah.
And David Feely, I got James Rodé, also from Psych. George Baez, I got Valente Rodriguez, the guy from the George Lopez show.
I'm just blown away that this is incredible.
Yeah, I'm gonna add in your brother real quick. He's ready, but keep going.
All right, DeMarcus Van Dyke. I got Anthony Mackey, the guy. He's in 8 Mile, Empire, a couple of those type of shows.
Okay, I know.
And David Cooney. I got Mahershala Ali.
Yo.
Hi, Gabby.
What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, guys?
We're just chilling. How you doing, brother?
Chilling, bro. Playing a lot of NCAA.
You're welcome.
So we played wiffle ball too.
When you first mentioned the thinking of coaches and who would play them as actors, the first thing that popped into my head, and I've been laughing to myself ever since, is you know who Peter Boyle is? He's the dad on Everybody Loves Raymond, the old guy. I just pictured him as Larry Coker, and I've been laughing to myself ever since.
Oh, that's actually a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, freaking Gabby, I mean, we already talked about The Office, man, and we missed your input.
Oh yeah, man, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I mean, I was ready for some Office talk.
You're good, brother. You're good. I asked your brother this, but who do you hate the most in that show?
Who do I hate the most in that show?
Yeah.
Honestly, I think Packer was super annoying. I'm not the biggest fan of Packer.
Yeah.
I'm indifferent on him. I think he's funny for the first 20 seconds he's in, and then it just gets repetitive.
No, I just feel like his and he's just so spotty in the show. I feel like his character's pretty useless. I'm not a fan. I love everybody else. I can't say I hate him. I don't like Gabe. I'm not a fan of Gabe. I know that.
Oh, I like Gabe.
Oh no, I don't like. He's the worst.
No, Gabe sucks.
Like Gabe.
Oh, he's so he's so gross.
The thing is
he just looks weird. Like I wouldn't like him in any role. I just think he's a strange looking dude.
So, everybody in their life has a Gabe Lewis. You either work with him, you go to school with him. Everyone in their life has a Gabe Lewis.
That's kind of true. A lot more when I rewatched it because I love his character on Silicon Valley. So hilarious to me now because of how funny he is on Silicon Valley. That second time through, I like Gabe a lot more.
Mm. The funniest line that he has is when they're in Tallahassee and Packer pukes on him and he says, they don't make these like jeans and boot cut anymore.
Oh yeah.
Bro, it's so funny. How are you doing with no sports, Gabby?
Bro, honestly, if I'm being completely honest, it sucks, but like, I don't know. I feel like I've found other ways to pass my time. I don't know. Like, I just feel like I just figured it out. Like, I'm not like, honestly, I'm not like dying like or anything like that. I've been able to manage and just kind of push through it, which is weird, but it's true for some reason.
Sheesh, man, you make me feel like I'm sucking at life. I'm losing it over here.
Bro, I've had a lot of things going on, so I've just been a little bit distracted too. But honestly, getting that Cal brought me the Xbox the other day, and he dropped NCAA, and honestly, it's been a game changer for me. The past couple of days, I've been hitting it hard, and I feel like I'm so invested in my dynasty right now, and I feel like it's helped me kind of get through it. I feel like there's actually college football going on.
Absolutely. Well, I know this was a few weeks ago, but just give us your quick input. So what was week one like at spring ball? The only week at spring ball.
Only week at spring ball. It was good, man. Definitely a lot of positives. I got to shuffle back real quick. Derek King honestly looks super, super legit. Like every time I saw him throw, I remember last offseason kind of coming in and watching Tate Martell for the first time. I remember being like extremely, extremely unimpressed and just being like, okay, like this guy, like, you know, the hype was around him. Like he had that two minute highlight reel against like Tulane or whatever it is at Rutgers that he looked fantastic. And then like Derek King was like just the complete polar opposite. Like you saw right away that this kid could throw it. This kid, like there's something different about him. And then the second practice, the Tuesday that they opened it up completely. He was just on fire. I mean, like he the first day walking out of practice, he hit four straight receivers, like on four straight plays, four straight completions, and that left me super impressed. Tuesday, he hit D. Wiggins on a bomb perfectly in stride right in front of us, and that was just like ultra impressive. And then he comes around sprinting all the way down to the pylon, meeting D. Wiggins there, like absolutely flying, like beating everybody to the ball. Like the kid is so fast, and so I was super impressed with him. Let me see. I'm trying to think of other things. The receivers, I thought the receivers look good for the most part. I on it, like you kind of lose the freshmen in the shuffle. Like you don't even kind of realize that they're freshmen just because you kind of like the way they're moving, like the pace at which they're going. They all kind of blend in, you know, like Xavier Restrepo looked really good. That was the first time I'd actually seen him compete in live action at all. And I was pretty impressed with how smooth he is and how sure-handed he is. I mean, then the rest of them, Daz Worsham looked awesome. Keyshawn Smith to me might be that kid might be a star here. That might be the biggest steal that the Hurricanes have had in any class in quite some time. I really think that he's extremely, extremely talented. And I think the ceiling's very, very high for him. And defensively, we didn't get to see a whole bunch just because we didn't get to really see a lot of offensive versus defensive action. Ta'Cory Couch did look good in the coverage drills that we did see. I believe on Tuesday we saw the whole open practice. I think it was only one pass that I saw caught on him, and that's that. You know, we're very thin at that corner, so there was a lot of reps going in and out there. And Ta'Cory Couch definitely stood out, so I think that he's somebody that could potentially step up, and he kind of needs to with how thin the cornerback room is. I'm trying to think of anyone else. And then like physically, you just see like the defensive line, and it's just a bunch of freaks of nature. Like Jalen Phillips just looks absolutely massive. Greg Russo was bigger than the last time I saw him, and he's a very large human being regardless of the time frame in which you encountered him. Quincy Roche looks very, very strong. I mean, I think that it's everything we wish Trevon Hill would have been. I think we're going to get that from Quincy Roche just because he's not going to have that gap, which he didn't play after the second game of the season. And then he had to wait all the way till the end of the summer to enroll. Then he had to get back into football shape. Like Quincy Roche's literally just packed his bags, moved to Miami, and picked up right where he left off. So I think that that's going to be a really, really massive addition. And then the offensive line, you got to see, you know, that's always wait and see mode with the offensive line, just because you don't really know what you're going to get. Obviously with the new system, it's going to be a lot quicker. They're probably not going to have to do as much. It's just kind of like, I don't think as much is going to be expected out of them or demanded out of them just because of how quick everything's going to be going. So we're definitely going to see there, but we're definitely saw some shuffling. Zion Nelson doesn't look like he's going to be the left tackle. He's actually been working as a second team right tackle. So that's something to keep an eye on moving forward. Of course, it was only a couple of days into spring. Avery Huff at linebacker, that's a position that I've been really worried about. And he looks He looks like he's the real deal. I mean, he's long, he's fast. I think he's more of a Manny Diaz type of linebacker. You know, he's not kind of like the stockier type of Shaq Quarterman where he's like kind of a run stuffer. I think he's gonna be able to do a good job like protecting the pass as well and just like being able to cover guys. So I think that I feel a little bit more optimistic there just based on what I saw. And yeah, I mean, just based on the four practices that I was able to see, that's pretty much my 2 minute rundown of that.
No, that was perfect, bro. That was awesome. And I want to ask you guys, and I'll open up. I'll ask you first, Kelly. Give me three players that, or you think, will surprise a lot of people this year for the Canes.
Surprise a lot of people. Yeah, I wasn't ready for this one. I think we're gonna see. I do think Avery Huff is gonna be one of those guys that I think he's gonna contribute, you know, early and often here. Let's see. The receivers, man. I think we're gonna see a lot. I can't point out one guy. I think, but like a Jeremiah Payton type of guy, I think is gonna produce on. I think we're gonna see him step into a pretty nice role there, and hopefully Chaney and Knighton come in and dominate too, man. Like they get reps, you know, often and early, and you know, between them and Cam Harris, I think we can see something pretty special on offense, man.
Okay, that's good. What about you, Jordan?
Three guys that are gonna pop. I mean, I don't know, man. I gotta go with Jeremiah Payton just because of how worried I am about the wide receivers. I know that was just said, but I don't know, man. I'm actually really intrigued to watch Jafari Harvey this year. I know we're loaded at DN, but I mean, nothing would make me happier if we're still getting to the QB like crazy. Even when our starters are rotating out. So let's go there. And then I'm going to say Avante Williams today. So
I love that answer. What about you, Gabby?
Just for the sake of being different. I'm going to go John Campbell. John Campbell. I believe he's going to be our starting left tackle. I think that this system suits his skill set a lot better. I just think that, you know, working with Garen Justice, I think we should expect to see a much better offensive line. You know, all of them are coming back. I think John Campbell is someone specifically that is really going to benefit from this. So I'm going to say John Campbell. I'm going to go someone on the defensive line, and I'm going to go with one of the tackles. I'm going to say Nesta. I think it's time for Nesta to kind of have his. Kind of be what everyone expected him to be. It's not very easy to come in as a defensive tackle and just kind of impose your will right away. But he's going to be going into his third season now as a University of Miami player, and I think that it's time for him to really step up and be that trench bully that everyone thought that he was going to be at one point. And my third guy kind of was a sleeper for me last year, but I think the way that Rhett Lashley runs his offense and the way he utilizes tight ends, I think that this guy could have a sneaky good year, especially if Brevin does continue to have those hiccups with his health. I think that Will Mallory is really going to benefit from this offense. I think regardless of the tight end that plays the most is going to do really well. So assuming Brevin maybe doesn't come back right away or just can't start the season or just has another setback, I think Will Mallory, even regardless, I know that they're not afraid to run two tight ends. I think Will Mallory could be set up for a pretty big year.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Will Mallory. Everyone knows. I mean, remember fall camp last year? Mallory was killing it. Like, the talent is there, and I love Nesta, too. My three guys, I honestly think I think Mike Harley is going to have a really good year. I think people are kind of forgetting him in the midst of Pope and Wiggins. I think Mike Harley is going to be good. I think not a lot of people are talking about Gervin Hall because he struggled a little bit as a first-time starter last year. I think Gervin's going to do really good at safety along with Bubba Bolden. And then my last guy, I was not a fan of. A lot of people bring him up. And I wasn't a fan of him just because of how small he was last year. And Gabby, you talked about him a little bit ago. But Ta'Cory Couch, I think he's going to be really good in coverage as a cornerback. So those are my three guys.
Yeah, those are solid. I really like Ta'Cory Couch. I think that he, I think that there's a lot of potential there. And Gervin, I mean, Gervin has a very, I mean, to me, has one of the highest. I know Kev is huge on Gervin. He's been talking about Gervin for a long time. And even Matt Daugherty, who was the former director of player personnel, when he came on Storm Search to talk to us before we kicked off against Florida last year, he said Gervin Hall was one of those guys that he expected to take a really big step forward. So, I mean, Gervin Hall is someone that could potentially be set up for a really, really big year, especially with the depth there that, you know, I feel like we have a lot of guys, especially in the safety room, that we're going to be able to rotate. I think that he's going to benefit from that more than almost anybody.
Okay, so I got one last question before we send you guys off. But so, gun to your head, does Manny Diaz coach not this coming season, but next season? So does Manny make it through this year? Gun to your head.
Yes.
Kyle, you want to go, Kyle?
Kelly says yes. yeah, I think, I mean, yes under the premise that he's done everything we've asked him to. So everything as a fan, like us as a fan base, we don't have much to complain about right now because, you know, we called for a new offensive coordinator. We got a new offensive coordinator. We wanted to change on defense. He started kind of taking over defense, more than Blaker did. And, you know, we brought in Roche. I mean, I think he's done everything that we've asked him to. So, you know, if the production follows the decision, then I don't see why he wouldn't be here next year. And, you know, hopefully for a long time after that. Last thing we need is more coach turnover.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Oh, and while you were talking, I thought of John Travolta as Al Golden. How great would that be?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
All right, Cal or Gabby, what were you gonna say?
Yeah, so I agree. I think that Manny Diaz is gonna be the head coach in 2021, unless it goes really bad. But I don't think it's gonna go really bad. I mean, my kind of take on the whole thing is, you know, a lot of people get their first head coaching job not at a program like the University of Miami. You know, a lot of these guys start off at much smaller schools and they're able to kind of go through their process, make their mistakes and all that stuff. Manny Diaz, I mean, it just worked out that way that his first head coaching job was at the University of Miami. You know, like 4 years before that, he got fired from Texas as a defensive coordinator, you know, or like he wasn't being groomed for this necessarily, you know. This opportunity kind of just fell on him. And I think you got to let him go through his mistakes. Last year was a huge one. He's got to learn from everything that happened, of course. I'm not making excuses for the guy, but I think that things are going to be different this year. I'm hoping they're going to be different this year. He's made all the right moves. You know, he went out, he got a quarterback. He went out, he got the offensive coordinator. He's made all the moves that he's needed to make in order to practically make those moves to make 2020 better, significantly better than 2019 was. And I think he does the right things unless it goes like really, really terribly. And even if it's like really, I'm trying to think of how bad it really needs to be. I think even with like a seven win season, I think Manny Diaz will still be the head coach. Honestly,
that's a hot take.
Yeah,
that's a hot take. But I really do think that he's gonna be the. I really think that they're all in on him.
No, I'm actually. I'm with you. I agree with both of you and the explanations you gave. I think he did everything we asked him for, and it's going to buy him another year unless it's catastrophic. I think it'd have to be as bad as this year for him to get fired, honestly. I know that's different than what I was saying on this pod like 2 months ago, but now that the dust has kind of settled from the season and everything, I mean, he's done everything the right way, or at least he's done everything we've asked him for. So, I mean, honestly, that's kind of on us if it doesn't work, right? We asked for speed and tempo. We asked for new O-line coach, and we got all these things, and we're happy about it. So, I mean, if it doesn't work, I mean, doesn't that kind of mean that we asked for the wrong things? I mean, I don't know.
No, I mean, that's – you guys said it perfectly, and I completely agree. But, hey, we loved having you guys on. I know I've wanted to have both your Ruchia brothers – on at the same time, and we got to do it again. We love you guys. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Take care.
Always a pleasure.
Stay safe. Wash your hands.
We'll do. See you guys later.
Yeah, hey guys.
Bye.
I love those guys.
Oh yeah, dude, they're the best. I wish they just lived down the street so all four of us could hang out all the time.
I know. I loved that we talked about The Office. I love that.
Yeah, we should all just have a weekly group chat that we don't record.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to say some things that don't go on air.
Yeah. Yeah, same, man.
Oh, good deal. And I mean Callie too. But Gabby just knows his stuff about the Hurricanes. I don't know if there's someone I love talking to about the Canes more than Gabby, just because he knows what's going on. Like, and he just does a great job at expounding and, you know, going into detail that, you know, we're not talking to like a huge like X's and O's like football genius. Like, he breaks it down and, you know, tells it to you in a very plain way what's going on with UM.
No, he's amazing, man. I think he's got a long career of doing, you know, football type stuff ahead of him, and I'm intrigued to see where it takes him, because he's really good at what he does.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great people, great guys. And so, and we have now one more guest.
Yep, and we're running behind, so let's see. I'll get him on right now. We're getting Brian Monroe, former UM player. So I'm excited, man. Good job getting you just keep these lineups so stacked for us, bro.
Well, thank you. Yeah, let's get him on.
Okay. Brian, how you doing, man? You're live on the Fours Up Pod.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. We now welcome on former UM punter, and now he's on 790 The Ticket, 560 WQAM, Brian Monroe. Brian, what's going on, brother?
Man, you know, just sitting here doing nothing.
yeah, right.
And, you know, it's like everybody else right now, right? In this tough time that we're going through, trying to get through it. And I mean, the good thing is you get to study up on a lot of players, catch on to some film for next year. But yeah, man, just getting through it.
Okay. Well, I mean, let's jump right into it. Who's who you've been watching on film lately?
We're gonna get so a buddy of mine, John Beeson. We're gonna get into doing actually during pretty much the whole team, since we ain't got nothing else to do. So since I do the pregame show for the Canes, and then also do a lot of stuff on 790, it'll give me, you know, pretty much the Rolodex of what to do for each player, strengths, weaknesses, the whole nine yards. So we're going to get into that probably this weekend. So we haven't started yet, but we're going to get into probably pretty much the whole team.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the Canes going into the 2020 season?
I mean, they got a lot of work, right? You know, we look at the last 2 years with this team, right? There's been talent on the team, but there's been something missing. So obviously Coach Rick, he left. They're bringing Manny Diaz. He brings in a new offensive coordinator, new offensive staff. That didn't work. I commend Manny Diaz for switching it up and going to the spread finally, bringing in Lashley. I'm very eager to see exactly what this team can do in the spread, because this is what these kids have been doing since Pop Warner. You get a quarterback like Derek King that's been able to perform at a high level already in college football in this offense, so he'll be exciting to see. But when it comes down to it, it starts up front, right? Offensive, defensive line, and we have been really bad in offensive line for a while, whether that's been young, miscommunicating, or just getting beat one-on-one. And then we have some special guys on the defensive line here and there, but we collectively as a group, we really haven't had that like we had back in the day. But, you know, we have some guys this year that if they can take the next step of defensive tackle, I think this defense can be special again. But, yeah, that offensive line is the thing that worries you going into spring now that it's canceled. It's going to put the Canes behind the eight ball when it comes to next season, because they're not going to be able to gel like they want in spring and this offseason.
Yeah. No, so, I think you – sorry, Jordan, go ahead.
Oh, you're fine. I just got a quick question. So who are some of the more unsung heroes on the team, guys that don't get a lot of exposure, don't get a lot of credit, I guess? Who are some of your favorite guys in that role that you're excited to dig in and watch some film and see how they did last year?
Honestly, I really want to see more in De'Aaron King for obvious reasons. I think, you know, we haven't had a dynamic quarterback at that position, I'll say ever, at Miami. We've had some special quarterbacks, obviously, going to the 80s, but we're talking about dynamic as far as an athlete can do it all. We've never had that before at Miami, so I'm very eager to sit down and actually see what his strengths and weaknesses are. And then we have a lot of young guys, I think, that could step up big time. Jeremiah Payton, I think, can be a guy that's depending on. I love the two true freshmen that came from Deerfield. Just watching him in the one practice that I did see, X, he never dropped a ball. He's already thick. Looks like he's been hitting the weights hard. And I think he's going to be a young man that contributes year one, as well as his teammate, Knighton. You know, I like Cam Harris and what he does, but he's more of a kind of a power back, right? He may give you one cut and go, try to run you over. We don't really have that scat. I'm going to make one or two guys miss, hit 60 yards and go to the house. Now, I know we have Chaney coming in as well, but he's injured, so I haven't seen him play yet. But just from seeing the quick burst that you saw from Knighton, the way he hit the hole, move, and have that scat ability, he, to me, looks like he could be somebody special in this offense, especially since in the spread, he's going to have opportunities to have, you know, little numbers inside the box as well. And then you look on defense, Bubba Bolden, I think before he got injured, was a guy that really was going to contribute for this defense and really hold down the safety position. So I'm eager to see him come back from the injury.
I mean, I completely agree. I'm a huge fan of Bubba Bolden. I said that when he came to Miami, this is a guy that has the talent that he will be playing on Sunday in a few years. I think he's one of the more talented players to come through Miami in a few years. I want to talk about your time as a Hurricane. Correct me if you're wrong or if I'm wrong. You played from 03 to 06, right?
Correct.
Okay, so when you walked in as a true freshman, Miami had just appeared in their second straight national championship game. What was it like walking into that program and feeling those expectations for Miami? Like, what was the feeling around Coral Gables when you came in as a freshman?
I think it was different from now. I mean, obviously, you know, you walk into the locker room. I walked into it. We had, what, six first-rounders on that team. So it was completely different because the teams that I were on, the players police themselves, pretty much coach themselves. So when you walk into the locker room, yeah, at the beginning, it's like you and only the freshmen, so you guys get to know each other. But then the juniors and seniors and sophomores, they come in and instill their seniority about, you know, what's about to happen, what you're going to have to do, the whole nine yards. But, you know, they were tough on us, but I think they were tough on us for a reason. You know, they really wanted to push you because you're talking about guys that came in here as number one players in America. Now you're fifth on the depth chart. And that was like an eye-opening experience for some of these high school guys that had always been the man. And I think that that competition is really what made those teams great. You know, for me and some other guys, it was like a nerve-wracking thing. You're walking in here and you're like, yeah, I just watched him on national TV. I just watched him. He's going to be a first-round pick. And then also, we also had all the guys that just graduated. They were there, too, as well, as far as training and just visiting. So Andre Johnson was there a lot. Ed Reed was there a lot. So these are guys that you like, okay, these are the best of the best. And here I can pick the brain. I can talk to them about anything. I think it was more of a nervous excitement that now that you're part of this and now you have to prove yourself why you should be wearing the U.
So we've had one of your former teammates, LeVon Ponder. We've had him on the podcast a few times. And one thing that I've always been interested in hearing him talk about. So how is the current state of the program? How is that different from your time as a player?
I would say the current state is the guys in the locker room, right? You can always have talented guys because we are in South Florida, who's the hotbed of players in America. But I think that when I was there, like I said, the guys policed themselves. The guys held themselves accountable. You know, when it came to 7-on-7, when it came to off-season stuff where coaches couldn't be involved, they were the ones that ran it. Meetings, even sometimes, players run it. Like, you'd walk into a meeting, Sean Taylor, he's the one on the board and stuff like that, or Jonathan Vilma. I don't think they have that leadership right now from talking to some of the guys and some of the guys that I know. And I just think that it's a different world right now in college sports. And, you know, we didn't have social media like these kids do nowadays. And they come in here with 60,000 followers, 100,000 followers. And everyone's always pumping up their head. You're the man. You should do this. You should do that. You should go transfer. You should do this. Instead of, like, fighting. you know, and
yeah,
you don't see as many kids fighting and enjoying that competition because, you know, when people talk about stories, all the Green Tree practice field, you know, practice is harder than games. It really was. Like, you would used to go to the practice and see some of the things that was going on. You'd be like, wow. I mean, our one-on-ones that we had, you're talking about Kellen Winslow going against John Vilma. You had Sean Taylor going against Dre. Like, the one-on-ones, the competition, the defense never even wanted to give up a touchdown to the scout team when I was there. They would literally try to decapitate you. And I don't think that competition is there at the Miami. I don't think the leadership is there within the locker room. Now, we've had a couple. You've had the Shaq Quartermans. You've had the DJ Dallas of the world and stuff like that. But it takes a collective group to hold each other accountable and not go out before games or the week of and the whole nine yards like that. I would have never flown back in the day. You have to have kids that hold themselves accountable, that want to be great and not just say it, for this team to get back on the national stage and stay there.
Well, and I mean, yeah, you said it perfectly. And we were talking earlier in the show how those leaders, like a guy like a Ken Dorsey, you know, those players like Ed Reed, we haven't had those kind of leaders in a long time. When you were there, and not like 03, because, I mean, you say like obviously like a guy like Vilma, Sean Taylor, like 04, 05, who were the real leaders of that team and that really stood out to you and made an impression on you?
I would say as we got older, you know, the John Beasons of the world, the Roger McIntoshes of the world, Greg Olson, Brandon Merriweather, those were our, you know, more of our vocal guys that would lead from example as far as weight room practice, the Kyle Wrights of the world, you know. But we still had guys because they were learning from the guys before them as far as how to handle business, how to study, how to go ahead and train in the off season, how to, hey, you know, yeah, we just did a 2-a-days, but let's go ahead and get some extra work in, whether that's the jug machines or in the film or just going and getting extra, you know, running in and stuff like that. So Rock Atkins, Kareem Brown, we had a lot of guys. And, you know, I guess people think since, like, oh, yeah, you know, after the 03 team, you guys were terrible. And I'm like, well, you know, my junior year, we're still ranked number 3 in the country. And if we didn't lose to Georgia Tech at home a night on a Thursday, we're probably talked about in the national championship conversation right there. So, you know, we had studs, we had leaders and stuff like that. It's just that you just don't get the love as some of the teams. And I guess since Miami hasn't been what they've been before, everyone thinks this 03 was over with.
Yeah. Well, do you think that coaches can create that kind of atmosphere, or do you think that those type of players that step up and you know, hold the team accountable and just have that, you know, that alpha leadership, are those kind of kids just born that way, or do you think coaches can influence that?
You can create it a little bit, but you need those guys to do it themselves. No one can push you to be great. No one can motivate you to be great. It's going to take yourself looking at yourself in the mirror and say, I need to do this. You know, I had a coach, Don Solinger, and he would be the hardest coach on. He'd rip you to your face, to the media, the whole nine yards. But he always said it's about the man in the mirror. And, you know, at first you never really understood it as an 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid. Like, why is the dude going so hard on me? Why does he keep saying this? And then you realize that as you get older, what he wasn't trying to instill with you. Being around so many great leaders, I don't think it's something that you can create. I think it's something that's in you. You know, from day one, as a freshman, one of our biggest vocal leaders was John Beeson. And that was just in him. It's something that, since we've become very close friends, that you can see that his whole entire life, from middle school, from him going to Shaman Amadana, leading, you know, from example from there, to going to the pros, being a first-round pick, Pro Bowl, the whole nine yards. It's something that's within these kids. Now, I will say this, the class that they brought in, you're talking about 13, I believe, early enrollees, which has never happened at Miami. That tells you, one, that these kids want to come in here, work hard, and change the culture and change what's going on. Now, I haven't spoke to the young men yet individually, but you can just tell by some of the answers that they want to be the class that turns around and be great. A guy that I wish that we had longer than for 1 year, it's KJ Osborne. KJ Osborne is exactly what you look for in a football player. When I met him the first time when he was on his visit, the first thing he said was, hey, nice to meet you. I can't wait to get down here and work. Now, it takes you back because you're like, well, I haven't heard that from somebody, you know, before. And he followed through with it. As soon as he came on here, extra time on the jugs, anytime after practice. And I kind of think, very thankful that KJ came to this team last year, because if we didn't have him in that wide receivers room, what we really had as a leader or someone to motivate, you know, the younger players and the older players, I guess you can say, that left early, as far as who's going to pick it up and be that guy, because we wouldn't have had that if KJ didn't come in.
No, and KJ Osborne, I remember when I covered fall camp last year, just being impressed with him, his like the aura around him. He carried himself in a very confident way, but it wasn't cockiness. He worked hard to get that, and so I really like KJ. Talk about, everyone loves to hear about Sean Taylor. You were only with him for a year with the Hurricanes. Tell the audience what he was like on the field and also off the field.
Well, I always got a funny story with Sean on the field. So I played scout team receiver, obviously, coming in as a freshman, because that's what you do as a freshman, especially a punter and kicker. And, I didn't realize, the competition level with everybody, because I'm a competitor. I came from the soccer world and stuff like that. I always liked the better athletes. But going as a kicker, you didn't realize, you're just a kicker. And I'm just like, I have no idea what that means. Like, I'm going to compete with you. I don't care if you're a receiver, DB, whatever. I'm going to run with you. We're going to do drills. So I'm playing receiver, and Coach Shannon gave us the routes, and it was a 9 route, so which is a go route. And I go, catch it, score a touchdown, kind of celebrated a little bit. And Sean just looks over with this like confused look and goes, "You okay, Rook?" I was like, damn, I messed up now. So Coach Shannon's like, "Run it again." So run the same play. They throw it to me. I'm looking at Sean. He's looking at me. He's not even looking at the ball. He's just looking at my chest. And he came and absolutely destroyed me. Didn't even look for the ball. Stands over me and says, "You ain't celebrating now, huh, Rook?" I was like, damn. So Sean, as far as a competitor on the field, I probably have never been around a better athlete. I think Sean could have went first round as a receiver, running back. Probably could have been an all-pro linebacker if he really wanted to be. He was just literally a specimen. He was a freak. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was, 6'3", sometimes weighing 230, run like a gazelle, and was just – you feared him. Like, you saw receivers from the team. They feared Sean Taylor on the field. Off the field, I think Sean Taylor was a completely different man, right? He was actually very quiet. We had a small circle of friends. And then there'd be some times where he wouldn't even acknowledge you. You're like, damn, okay. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're having a conversation. And I remember one time was my freshman year. My birthday always lands around bowl game time. And one of the trainers, her birthday was around mine. And you never want to say your birthday, especially when you're young, because it literally would whip your ass. So I'm going by the pool, and we were at the Orange Bowl my freshman year. And one of the trainers was like, "Oh, hey, Brian, it's your birthday tomorrow, right?" I'm looking around like hoping none of my teammates are there. And Sean's there. I'm like, Sean ain't going to say nothing. He just looked at me kind of, he ain't going to say nothing. Sure enough, I get in the locker room the next day. All the dudes are like, "Hey, what's up, birthday boy?" And I'm like, "Oh, man." So Coach Coker goes, "All right, birthday boy, call it up." So, you get one guy to break down the team or whatever after you're done stretching. Soon as I'm about to break it down, here comes Sean and Kellen running at me full speed before I could even say, "Ready, ready, break." Yeah, I got whooped a little bit, but Sean was a special dude, man. I mean, as far as, people always like to say, "Oh, this is gonna be the next Sean Taylor." Like, no. You need to stop with that comparison, because you're talking about combination between size, athleticism, knowledge of the game, fearing people. Like, there's not going to be another Sean Taylor, probably not in my lifetime, because that's how special he was. And I have no doubt if he, rest in peace, was alive and still playing the game, he would go down as probably the best safety ever to play the game with another fellow, Kane and Ed Reed.
I love it, man. That's amazing. So my last question for you, I think Marsh has one after me. What is the number one thing that you want to see out of the Miami Hurricanes during the 2020 season?
I want to see some energy. I want to see that they care. You know, there's at times where you would see this team the last couple of years, they just didn't look like they wanted to be there or care. They weren't flying around. Like, I could turn on a MAC game and see these guys flying around more than us. You know, I want to see energy from the team. I want to see them, you know, want it. And I'm obviously very excited about the spread offense finally, because I've been drooling at other teams with the spread and just having a dual threat quarterback that can tuck in and run at any time, get out of situations, especially with our offensive line being what it is. I'm very eager to see what Derek King brings to the table. And I just want to see us get back to having fun and having that swag.
Yeah, it's awesome. My last question, and it's a very generic question that we love to ask former Hurricanes. Give us your top three most memorable moments as a Miami Hurricane.
Top three most memorable moments. Okay, let's go with the first one being offered by Coach Coker. A scholarship, I remember that day like yesterday, coming down on a Sunday practice with my mom and sitting in the locker room. I think that was probably one of the best experiences for me. First game in the OB against Florida at night with the epic comeback. Obviously one of the best games ever to be played in Miami. Devin Hester opening in, you know, kickoff the whole nine yards. I think that was a special night. And I'm gonna say graduating from Miami as well.
That's awesome. I was like 9 years old sitting in the Orange Bowl when Hester took that back, and I have never heard anything louder in my life.
You know, it's crazy. People always ask me, was that the loudest game that you've ever been a part of? Or talk about the Notre Dame game that happened in 2017. And I always say, I'll say this, the Florida-Miami game was actually my second loudest game that I've ever been involved in. The loudest game I've ever been involved in was actually when we played Clemson up there at Death Valley, and we went into overtime with them. When they came back, I believe we were up 14 or something points, and they were coming back on us, and I had to punt in the fourth quarter. My legs were shaking because the ground was moving. That's how loud it was.
Jeez.
Oh,
yeah.
LeBron actually said something similar to that last time he was on. So you guys definitely on the same page there.
Yeah, it was definitely crazy. But I tell people all the time, listen, there's no better atmosphere than a night game in the OB, especially when we put in the extra bleachers in the end zone. It is that was definitely something special that I wish that City of Miami did something else instead of give us this Marlins Stadium that nobody ever goes to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. But Brian, thank you so very much for coming on, man. Anytime you want to come on again, we'd love to have you. And go Canes as always, brother.
Yeah, man, no problem, man. Shout out to all the Canes fans out there. And I know a lot of you guys are sitting back doing like me, watching some old games and some memories. So hopefully we can make some new ones in 2020 and hopefully see you guys out there at the games this year.
Love it, man. Hopefully we'll see you week one.
Oh, for sure. Listen, I'm not missing a game unless this quarantine and this thing keeps going, but I never miss a home game.
Cool. We'll see you then.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Go Canes.
Man, that Sean Taylor story. Oh,
yeah.
That was so cool.
Yeah. I have former Canes on, man. We need to We need to go harass some of them on Twitter and get them on here.
Well, we got one from the 01 team coming on tomorrow, so that should be fun. I got so many effing questions for that guy.
Yeah.
Holy cow. I mean, yeah. I just love hearing about Sean Taylor. Like, he's just such a mythical, almost mythical, like, player.
Yeah. No, he definitely is. It's. And I mean, unfortunately, I think he would be as revered and, well, to some extent, like when people with legendary talent like pass away early, you see this a lot in music. It kind of like it builds like this myth around them, or this, you know, it makes them a mythical figure. You see that with guys like Jimi Hendrix, or what's the dude from The Doors, Morrison.
Jim Morrison?
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, how it's almost like they become larger than life when they pass away early. I mean, we're going to see that with Kobe Bryant. I think Sean Taylor was talented – enough to hear all this stuff, but you know, his passing has really just made him like so much a part of the culture. I mean, I think everyone grieving together and you know all that kind of stuff just, I don't know, just really made him integral into Miami and football. I mean, you can't think about Miami and football anymore without Sean Taylor.
Yeah. I mean, and just the fact that like people say like, yeah, he was good. That dude, like, and that's just an understatement, dude. There's not many more talented players I've watched than Sean Taylor. Just seeing him back there. And when he got his hands on the football, it was just incredible. And yeah, I mean, it just adds on to the legacy of the University of Miami. And that's why I love having those former players on. They give you an inside look and, you know, inside stories that, you know, we don't know and, you know, what these guys were actually like as a person.
Yeah. I loved all the love that John Beeson was getting while we were interviewing Brian Monroe. He was John Beeson was probably my first favorite player other than Willis McGahee on the team. So when I was watching those, you know, 2004, 2005 season, stuff like that, man, I just loved watching Beeson play. And then he was one of my favorite NFL players when he went to Carolina as well.
Hey, maybe we can, with our connections now, maybe we can get him on the show.
Ooh, I would fangirl so hard, dude.
Yeah. I love Beeson. I remember he threw out the first pitch on opening day for when I was in like fifth grade in my Little League Baseball League. I was like, I went to shake his hand and I was like trembling.
Yeah. Scared. Yeah, if we had him on, I'd be trembling while we interviewed him. I'll be like, I've played you as Madden.
You were so cool.
Hey, remember that time when and you know what I'm talking about, the Chris Farley
skit. That when you remember when you were a Hurricane, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool, right?
That's so funny. But yeah, another good episode. I love it. I love doing this.
Yeah, man. That's I loved it. I loved that we were able to talk about The Office and, you know, go off topic a little bit with the Arudia brothers.
No, absolutely. I mean, breaks up the monotony. I mean, we can keep asking, like, talking about, like, the questions that we always answer and everything, but it's almost like hitting the refresh button, and it feels amazing to talk non-Canes every now and then.
Yeah, well, I'd actually love some feedback from our listeners on that. You know, if on occasion we had people connected to the program, you know, like the Arudia brothers are, we've talked to both of them on here. They're both very knowledgeable, you know, great parts of the Twitter community for Miami football. You know, I want to know what you guys would think if we had people connected to the program on, but we don't always necessarily talk Miami football. And that way we're kind of getting to know, you know, Canes fam in a different way, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's fun to talk about the Hurricanes, but it's awesome to share other sides of ourselves with you know, Canes fans. And I mean, just like the other day, like when I went on my ranting session, like it gave people, they were able to look at me in a different kind of way, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love when we talk entourage. I love, you know, when me and you go off on our tangents at the end of episodes and are talking about pizza or whatever, or, you know, good stuff.
I mean, I wish other crap was going on right now. I'm so bored, dude. I'm so effing bored. And when Gabby said that he was actually doing okay without sports and he's still doing stuff, I'm like, damn, I'm a loser.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Oh, speaking of which, I had a Twitter question that I didn't get a straight answer out of you. So I need to hear it live on air. So who is your best recurring cameo in Entourage? And the choices I listed were Gary Busey, Seth Green, and what's his name? Bob Saget.
Bob Saget's pretty damn funny. I mean, they're all, I hate Seth Green in the show, but He's funny too. Gary Busey. I was watching the episode the other day when they bought that desk off of Gary and he painted on drama.
Yeah.
He goes like, I don't want to paint you. I want to paint on you. Like, you are the art. I'm like, oh, that is so funny.
Yeah, dude. I think Bob Saget's probably more consistently good on that show than Gary Busey.
Yeah.
But my vote was for Gary Busey. And even if he was only in this one scene, I probably would have voted for him because I love this scene that much. But it's when Ari runs into him on the beach. And he's like, Gary, what's up, man? How you doing? And he's like, I know you. You were at craft service on Lethal Weapon 1, didn't you? And he's like, no, Gary, it's me, Ari Gold. I used to represent you. I was your agent. And he's like, you're a gut maggot with no guts.
You know? And he goes and he just says, God bless you, Ari.
Well, and then Ari, he's like, wow, you're about to spin off this planet, aren't you? I love it.
Dude, I was just thinking about the first time they met Bob Saget when they move into the new house, and Bob comes in like with a huge fruit basket or something, and he's just talking to Vince, and he's just like, don't you have sex with my daughters, Vince?
Yeah, dude.
And then Vince is like, who the hell was that guy?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Bob Saget is the safe choice just because he's so consistently good, you know, and the whole thing of, you know, him being into prostitutes and hard drugs and stuff is so funny because it's just so different than Danny Tanner, you know.
Who's your least favorite reoccurring cameo on Entourage?
Do the love interests count?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, let me think it over, but the first one that pops to mind is, and it's not her fault. She does fine. I just hate the storyline, but it'd be Mandy Moore. I can't stand the Mandy Moore episodes, man.
They're disgusting. They're like, it makes Vince out to look like such a bitch.
Oh, yeah, he is. He is
such a bitch. I hate Vince, dude. I hate him.
Yeah.
Well, and freaking tomorrow when we have Cam Underwood, my boss, come on the show. He loves Entourage, but he hates Johnny Drama.
What?
I know.
You know, I struggled with Johnny. I didn't hate him the first time I watched it, but I'd get annoyed with him quite a bit the first time through. But then ever since the second time through, I started to understand him better, and I just find him so hilarious now.
He's so funny. I don't know how you cannot find that funny. Like,
no,
he. I just like when he just like, and then it happens every episode when he like always relates something to like a show that he used to do, and he goes like, yeah, I remember when I like
was on Viking Quest, you know. Yeah.
Like he goes like, yeah, I remember when his wife tried to blow me and like at a Comic-Con in 89 or something like that, and it's just so funny, dude.
Oh, I love that, man. I love when they have like when they're in weird situations and people recognize Drama but not anyone else. It cracks me up so hard.
And they call him Tarvold.
Yeah,
like he's like, and he has such pride in the fact that he played a Viking. It's so funny.
Yeah, I love his anger
is just the greatest.
Yeah, or is it the episode that they go to the Cannes, the film festival in France? Is that the one where he's super popular and nobody knows who Vince is?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is hilarious, man. And then people run into the party at the end. They're like, hey, Tarvel from Viking Quest is having sex on the beach and he's been there for like 10 hours.
He's been on there for like 10 hours. Oh, but you know what sucks? I haven't seen any of those actors in anything else after Entourage.
No, it does suck.
Oh, good times. Yeah, we'll have to talk Entourage with Cam tomorrow. But my dog wants me to take her on a walk, so I gotta go do that. She's freaking won't shut the hell up.
I gotta go give my girlfriend some attention. So.
Hey, yeah, I you lucky. Yeah, you're lucky. I just have my dog.
Oh man.
Good deal. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we'll be back at it tomorrow.
It sounds good. Talk to you then, man. Go Kings.
Forza Podcast. Remember to like,